guys, and welcome back for another episode of the Social Hour Podcast, a podcast for sewists by sewists. I'm your host, Ashley.
And I'm your host, Bethany. And on today's episode, we are talking all about interfacing and stabilizer and that they are different.
I didn't know this. I'm a bad sewist.
No, you're not. No, you're not. We're going to be learning and edumacating. Ourselves. I love working with interfacing and stabilizer, so we're going to kind of get nerdy about it, but I think it's important because both of these are very important materials to help with your sewing projects. So we're going to take a deep dive, but before we do, Ashley, what you been doing?
Oh, man. Working on patterns, working on the farmhouse chic skirt.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so cute. If you have not made her farmhouse chic skirt pattern from Copper Creek Patterns that she released, it is so stinking cute. It's like the perfect springtime skirt.
It is, right? And Easter coming up. Like,
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I love it. I made it and I wore it on HSN recently, which you didn't know I was going to do that. I just took it as like a backup outfit, but then it ended up being my number one outfit, and it was so cute.
It was. I love.
I got a lot of compliments. Yeah. So I love it. It's super. I'm not usually a skirt person either.
I don't know why, because it was adorable on you.
Thank you. I think it's because it kind of cuts me. Like, this one sits a little higher, so it's easier. It's better. I think in the past skirts just hit lower, and I don't have a curve. I am built like a square, and I don't like have hips, and I don't have like curves. There's not like a huge difference between like my, you know, upper, like my upper bust, my waist and my hip. Like, there's not a huge, I am not an hourglass.
Yeah.
I'm a beanpole. So it's a little different.
There's the A line. It has a little bit of A line to it. So it kind of gave you hip.
It kind of gave me the hip fullness with like the pleats and the gathers and the elastic. So it worked. And then I made sure I wore a shirt that kind of tied at the waist right in front of the skirt. That shirt normally isn't meant for that. It normally is just a button down that I would tuck in. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to try tying this. I think it would be cute. And it actually kind of gave me more of like a point at the waist. Different. It worked. I've learned, thanks to sewing and patterns, I've learned how to manipulate things to work for my body. So I'm opening my mind to skirts. And it's funny because I did a skirt for my first pattern. But I paired that with a very fitted bodysuit, so it worked.
Yeah.
So I tried. Well, there were several people that paired it with like a oversized sweater.
Yeah.
And it was so cute on them. And I put it on there and I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
I can't pull it off. And I wish I could. It just, I get lost in it.
I thought it was really cute. I made it out of some linen. So it was very like farmhouse. And then I wear mine like at the waist, and
you were using like a really high waist.
Yeah. And that actually helps to make me not like, it just, I don't know. It helps my shape because I do have kind of an hourglass, I think, sort of, or I don't know what shape, what fruit I am, but, but I wore like a tight, fitted, what do you call it? Tank top. And then I put like a sweater over top.
Yeah,
with my skirt, and it actually like looked really, really good. I thought
so cute,
but that's not a typical way I would wear a skirt because I didn't really think about my body and what would look better. And so now I'm like, okay, well, now that I'm learning to dress for the shape of my body, I'm gonna be wearing the skirt more often and buy more linen because it is absolutely divine.
I know. So the linen, I had like a linen blend, and it was from Hobby Lobby, and actually Brock picked it out. He picked it out, and then like that next day I cut it and made it. And then the next day I flew to Tampa to go to HSN. So, you know me, last minute.
Classic.
Yes. I mean, it was a late night, but I got it done and it turned out super cute. And I paired it with little white sneakers, like little white heads.
So cute. Yeah.
And so it kind of like made it casual, but I did that because last time I was on HS and I wore heels with that leopard A-line or bias cut skirt.
Right.
And oh my gosh, my feet were killing me. And I was only on air for like 20 minutes. And this time I had 2 1-hour segments. So I was like, I am not wearing heels.
Yeah. For sure.
And a lot of the hosts there are like petite and I already tower over them. And so I was like, I think I'm going to not wear heels. And I wore tennis shoes and it was perfect because those who watched this recent airing on HSN, what you don't realize is I was actually running between two studios during the segment.
Yeah. You can't tell. You don't know that.
Yeah. I was like running across the hall, taking a swig of water, fixing my hair,
like a different, totally different space.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was across the way, but you have to walk around the whole studio, go across and then walk into that one around all the cameras and stuff. It was because our tables were so big.
Yeah.
They didn't want to have to take them out and then bring them back in again. So they just left them in the other studio that wasn't being used that day. Mm-hmm. And it stayed set up. So
why were the tables so big? What were on the tables?
Singer's new Momento cutting machine that's 24 inches wide. I know. It's so cool, y'all. And I feel like Ashley and I were talking before we hit record today, and we were like, I feel like we should do a whole podcast on cutting machines. So we're gonna gather that information and in the near future have a conversation about them. But if you haven't heard, Singer just launched a brand new cutting machine called the Singer Momento. It is a 24-inch wide cutting machine. It is beautiful. I just launched it on HSN live TV. And it's exclusively only available through HSN until the end of March. And then it'll be available over on singer.com. But other accessories are currently available on singer.com. So you can go get the machine at HSN and then you can go to singer.com and get all the other mats. Cause we could only sell certain things on HSN for the launch, but we have like bigger mats and heat presses and tools for weeding and brayers. And we have a brayer that's like huge. It's so good. We have all sorts of things. One. Yeah. So we didn't just launch a cutting machine.
No,
we launched a whole crafting category of products that we've never done before. Like we didn't just like stick our toe in the crafting world. We jumped in headfirst. Well, we've been working on this for years.
I had someone messaged me and be like, where's a 24-inch by 24-inch mat? I'm waiting for her to bring out the 24 by. I'm like, she can't talk about it.
I can't talk about it because it wasn't being sold through HSN. And the reason is because whatever we bundled together on HSN, fun fact, you guys wouldn't know this. Anytime we bundle extra feet with a machine or whatever, it has to fit in the box with the product, the main product. So the 12 by 24 inch mats, we couldn't fit into the box with the Momento because if we tried to squeeze them in there, they would have gotten bent and then they would have not worked well for you. So we didn't. So those ship in their own box flat so that they come to you in the best condition. Mm-hmm. So the 24 by 24 inch ones. So the ones that fit in the box are the 12 by 24 inch, and that the standard grip comes with the machine always, but for HSN only, we added the fabric one. So the 12 by 24 inch fabric mat. We also sell 12 by 12 mats too. So you can get smaller mats too. Oh. You can get the bigger mats. It's totally up to you. But we had to put mats that would fit in the box without getting damaged. So it really was because we didn't want you guys to receive something that wasn't going to be in good working condition. So the 24 by 24 inch mats. And I mentioned it, but I couldn't show them.
Same with the markers. You were like, there are more. And then you stopped. And I was like, more what?
More markers. We've got a whole kit. We'll do a whole episode on this, but we do have a whole kit of markers. We do have gel pens. I'm telling you need to go over singer.com and see all of it.
So just, I just lost my train of thought. I was going to say one more thing about it. Oh, it's gone. Okay.
It happens to the best of us.
Don't you hate it's that? Okay.
You know, it'll come to you in a minute while we're mid-conversation about interfacing, and we'll just shift gears.
Yeah.
That's on brand for us, so.
That's okay.
Oh, you're so disappointed and bugged.
It's annoying me.
The like, look on your face.
It was about the memento, and I got it. Woo! It is. Will they come out with a product bundle? Is that a thing?
So when we ship from Singer.com, we can ship you multiple boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So we can bundle more things. Whereas HSN, if they ship stuff, all the bundle pieces have to fit in one box. So that's why we're kind of limited as to like what we've been like the feet that I sold, the extra feet that came with the machine on HSN that we were selling, those fit into the box. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is like those have to be pre-boxed. Like when we do bundles like that on HSN, they go through and open the box, add those accessories in, and then have to reseal the box. For all of them. Mm-hmm. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them.
So a person does that. Oh, man.
People in a warehouse do that. Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot of work. Yeah. So there's a reason why we kind of are limited to what we can do.
But like with the you were selling the heavy duty, and then you were selling like secondary to that was the travel tote.
The travel tote.
Like wondering if there's...
Which are sold separately. They are not a part of the bundle. So they actually ship in their own box.
Yeah. So I'm just like, is there going to be a time where they have the memento? And then secondary to that, here's a bundle with...
they may in the future. But that bundle of accessories would also have to be repackaged into one box.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They may in the future. Exactly. I don't know.
Yeah.
We're going to have to get creative with some of that. So we'll see. I mean, it's really cool to kind of... see the behind the scenes. If you're not following me on Instagram, Craft with Bethany, I've shared like all my travels to HSN and behind the scenes and all of that.
She's in
my
Instagram stories this year.
Your
second home.
I'm going again in like what a couple weeks, and then I go 21? Again the week after that. So
yeah, and then you're gonna go again in April, but for other things.
I'm not going in April.
You're going to Tampa for other things.
Oh, but I'm going on a girls trip to Tampa. And then I might be going back to Tampa in May. Tampa's quickly becoming my second home.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to be back on HSN in July.
Mm.
Right after the 4th of July. And I'm thinking about taking Brock on that one. Because we normally do like a birthday trip for him.
Mm-hmm.
And his birthday's at the end of July, and I just thought, hey,
yeah, why not?
If I can just extend my trip and you come with me,
yeah,
why not? Mm-hmm. So, anyways, before we dive in too much further into our topic, I want to remind everybody that at the end of the episode, we will be having our sewing confessions, and let me tell you, the one we have today. It's spicy.
Yeah.
It is a spicy one. So stay tuned for that at the end of our episode. You'll be hearing all about that. But if you too have a sewing confession, be sure to click the link in our description or go to our website and submit your anonymous sewing confession. We don't know who these people are. And today's is a good reminder as to why we make it anonymous. All right, guys, let's dive into stabilizers and interfacing. Ashley, do you know the difference between interfacing and stabilizer?
I sure do.
Because we just talked about it.
Why wouldn't I not know the difference between
Did you know before today?
Well, that's another story.
It's okay.
That's another podcast.
These are my confessions.
Yeah.
These are Ashley's confessions. Okay, so I think we should start with the definition of interfacing and stabilizer.
Yeah.
I'll let you do the interfacing one. You want to read off? We're going to read the actual definition of these materials before we dive in.
See, the reason why I know interfacing is because I use it primarily, but
and I know stabilizer primarily, so
exactly
we make a good team, don't we?
Right, it's like the yin and the yang, right? You're the garment, and I'm the bags. But anyways,
yeah.
So sewing interfacing is material used in sewing projects to add structure, stability, and support to fabric. It's typically a thin layer of fabric, often non-woven or woven, that is placed between layers of main fabric piece during construction. But it's not also. That's something that I think you could use back in the olden days to be able to add structure. But now we got like
a slew usable. And yeah.
Just we're gonna go over them, but like it usables and wovens and all kinds of, and they're it's an interfacing product. It's not like just use thicker fabric. Anyways, it was used to reinforce things like collars and cuffs and waistbands and buttonholes, but we use it a lot in bag making to make structure, to create, you know, the shape of the bags and stuff. And then it also prevents your fabrics and stuff from distorting or stretching, which is a huge thing, especially if you're just like, I want to use this fabric, but it stretches and I want to stop it from stretching.
Yeah.
And it comes in various weights and types to suit different fabrics and projects. So we will talk all about that, but that's basically what sewing interfacing is.
Yes. So it's a permanent addition.
Yes, permanent.
Addition, like it doesn't leave the project. It's either fused or sewn in. It stays there. It's between layers of material, or, you know, like you said, in a cuff, or a collar. So it stays. Whereas sewing stabilizer is a material used to provide support, structure, and reinforcement to fabric during the sewing process. It is typically a temporary layer that is placed underneath or on top of the fabric being sewn to prevent stretching, distortion, and puckering. Stabilizers can be made of various materials such as paper, fabric, and adhesive-backed materials. They come in different forms, including so many that we're going to talk about here in a minute. Stabilizers are commonly used when working with delicate or stretchy fabrics, intricate embroidery designs, or when sewing seams that require extra support. They help improve the quality and appearance of the finished sewing project. So again, it's a temporary hold during the construction or sewing process that's usually removed in some method of cutaway, tearaway, or washaway. So that's the two differences. I think a lot of people get them mixed up, and rightfully so, because when you look at them, it's just all white stuff, right? Like there are some other colors of like interfacing and stabilizers that you can get. I know stabilizers can come in like a black or like a mesh, and there's some other things, but both have fusible, both have sewn in. But the difference is interfacing stays, stabilizer leaves. Okay. So if you remember nothing today, when you're looking at that like shelf of all the interfacings and stabilizers and on the bolts and all these different ones start to run together, interfacing stays, stabilizer leaves. Okay. Leaves the project. Okay. So Ashley, I'm going to ask you, what would you say is some of the most common reasons that you've used interfacing?
The most common reasons I use interfacing is to create structure
for bags.
Yeah, definitely for bags. There's just so many different types of interfacing these days for bags. They have really, the technology has and just blown up when it comes to that. And it can be very overwhelming.
Yeah. So let's take a minute to like, I'm just going to quickly read through some of the most commonly used interfacings. There are way more than this. You can get real specific with, like you said, weight, thickness, types, those kind of things. But we're just going to kind of brush the surface, and then you can kind of go, okay, I know I need something that will do this. And then you can kind of take that and dive into like the different types of that. So I would say one of the most common is fusible interfacing. And obviously this can come in so many different weights. I mean, it can come in something very thin for tailoring, for supporting buttonholes or a waistband or a collar or a cuff, but it can also come in really thick and be fusible for like bags and stuff. So fusible is a very loose term in the sense of the interfacing actually fuses with your iron to the material. There's like a smooth side and a bumpy side, and that bumpy side is the glue. And you want to put that to the wrong side of your material and fuse it. Mm-hmm. Then there's non-fusible interfacing. People do still use this, especially if they're going to put it in between layers and maybe stitch over it, quilt over it. It's okay if it's non-fusible.
Yeah. You kind of need to secure that into place by doing like a stitch around or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Unless you have a situation where you want to remove the interfacing before washing, and then that would be a situation where you would want to use a non-fusible. Woven interfacing is typically, you know, provide stability without adding much bulk. So this is probably going to be more commonly used for garments. There's knit interfacing. There's tricot interfacing, which is like a lightweight, fusible, commonly used with very lightweight fabrics where you want it to be almost undetectable. Sheer interfacing, same thing. You want it to be very lightweight, but you still want the fabric to have its drape. So if you're doing like a satin, but you need to interface something and you need it to still lay like satin and not look stiff, this is that situation. There's stretch interfacing. And then there's also water-soluble interfacing. Water-soluble is really fun because it's an interfacing. This is the oddball out. It's an interfacing, but it's temporary. So it kind of is a mix between interfacing and stabilizer.
Yeah, it is.
I wouldn't say that it's very commonly used in a lot of things because you want that stabilizer to stay in place. But I guess I could see, or the interfacing to stay in place. But so to me, this water-soluble interfacing is kind of like trying to be a stabilizer.
Yeah.
So, because it's a temporary... and it dissolves in water. And there's water-soluble stabilizer. Yeah. Anyways, so those are the different types of interfacing. I have started to dabble into the quilt, like the foam.
Yeah.
The foam interfacing Flex and using foam. That for bags and quilting it. And I freaking love it.
I know. You can take like your leather and make it into a quilted leather pattern, or you can use...
or just quilting cotton into like a really nice bag because you're adding that foam to really thicken it up and give it structure.
Yeah. I just purchased some. They have it from Pellon called Flex Foam. It's like, what, a quarter of an inch thick?
It's thick.
Yeah. And it's like, it just will add, like, if you're going to make like a bowler bag or something and you want it to be like, sit on your table, structure beautifully, and you would use that and it would just, oh, it's so nice.
Yeah. Now there's some that I've used before that are fusible, but they also come non-fusible. When I made the Lens Handmade H2O to go sling, and it has to support my giant 40-ounce water cup with water in it. It was like so heavy. There were, I don't know what it was, but it was thick.
Peltex?
It was Peltex.
Yeah.
And it was thick and we cut circles. And I think I had two circles of that in the bottom.
That's definitely something that people like to use for the bottom of, you know, if like some people put like a piece of cardboard or something, like no, you get Peltex and you cut it and it has fusible, but I find that the fusible doesn't work really well because it's so thick that the iron can't penetrate the layers. So it's really something that, you know, I just kind of either tape in with double-sided tape or I sew it in, but it'll make that bottom of your bag like a square or a rectangle, how you want it to be,
or a circle for like my sling.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is thick, it is stiff, and what's great, and you mentioned the cardboard thing, we've seen pattern companies who aren't really bag making companies release a bag and they're like, oh, just stick some cardboard in the bottom to keep it supportive, or you know, stick some plastic in there, and I'm like, but that's but you're sewing it in, and what if I ever want to wash that duffel bag?
Yeah, you can't.
My cardboard will dissolve.
Yeah.
So,
and if you put plastic in there, like it could, the sharp edges could also like poke holes in the fabric over time. So Peltex really is the only solution.
Because these interfaces, while they are a permanent addition to the material of the project, they're washable.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's why they're so important, because you may want to wash that bag. You may want to wash that garment. I hope so. you know, those kind of things. So I feel like it's.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many different ones. If you're not sure, they sell it like you can off the bolt, and you can just go get a little bit and play around with it, like sample it. It's not super expensive, right?
Mm-hmm. No, well, maybe, I mean, and it's always on sale, so don't ever buy it at regular price. Because
no, I will say Joann's is when I typically, when they run their, they'll run their interfacing and stabilizers like 60% off.
Mm-hmm,
and that's when I'll go and get a couple of yards, and that'll last me a long time, because a lot of projects, when we'll use your skirt, for example, Ashley, your Farmhouse Chic skirt, you had the waistband interfaced and you had the button placket interfaced. Mm-hmm. And that's just two small strips
mm-hmm.
out of this whole skirt. Like, you don't use a lot.
No.
So I feel like a little goes a long way, and you don't need to buy a ton of it, and it'll last you a long time. And here's the other thing. This is where I like fusible interfacing and fusible stabilizer, but really fusible interfacing, is I cut a strip, and then I ended up needing more. Mm-hmm. My strip wasn't long enough, and so I just cut another piece and just added it to the bottom, because it's fusible. It just was seamless. It doesn't have to be one consistent strip. You can kind of, like, when it's fusible, you can kind of patchwork it together.
I have done that so many times. And it's just like with interfacing, like, you use it up. Like, you don't just like, oh, I have, you know, like your fabric where you're like, I'll never use it. Like, no. You keep every single scrap of your interfacing, because exactly, you can just piece it all together.
And it's also, okay, so let's talk real quick. There's like an oddball out in this that wasn't mentioned on that list, and it's called Heat and Bond.
Oh.
And mm-hmm. Heat and Bond is a double-sided fusible interfacing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a permanent. So let's say you had a square of quilting cotton, and you could fuse one side of the Heat and Bond to that quilting cotton. Mm-hmm. And then you could draw on the paper backing, like, whatever shape. Let's say it's a heart, for example. So we're going to draw a heart on the paper backing of the Heat and Bond and cut that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can remove that paper backing. So now my heart fabric has got this shiny side on the back, and that's the fusible. So when I go and flip that over and put it, the shiny side down onto the right side of my skirt, for example, and I can press that onto my skirt, and it fuses that heart to my skirt. And then I can go with a satin stitch or a little fun decorative stitch and stitch all the way around that heart to permanently secure it. But that Heat and Bond prevents that material, that heart, from shifting while you're sewing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the applique process. That's the applique process. So I feel like it's worth mentioning that there is a material called Heat and Bond.
Mm-hmm,
it's a double-sided fusible. You fuse one side, you cut out your shape, you fuse the other side. And this is where these cutting machines can come in, especially if they cut fabric really well, where you can fuse your material with the Heat and Bond, and then you can cut out your shape with the cutting machine, and then you remove the shape and you're ready. You could do letters. You could do some very intricate things that would be really hard to cut out by hand.
Yeah, for sure. That's how I did my applique for the mm-hmm. kids' shirts. Before I had a cutting machine, even then I would take, I would go on my computer and I would print out letters, and then I would trace it. Onto the back. And then
have to hand cut them.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it was pretty good for not having like a cutting machine, right?
Yeah. So my mom, one of my favorite things that my mom made me when I was little was a beach towel with my name on it, because nothing has my name on it.
No.
Nothing.
Everything has my name on it.
Everything has Ashley's name on it. That's all they carry. The keychains all just say Ashley, because there's so many Ashleys.
There's so many.
There's never a Bethany. There's just a Beth. And I'm like, nope. No, nothing against the Beths out there, but my name's not Elizabeth. And so I go by Bethany. And so I never had anything with my name on it. So my mom made a beach towel with appliqued my name in these big letters all the way across the bottom. And then it had like three different sunglasses in three different colors. Mm-hmm. And that was my beach towel. I still to this day have that beach towel. I was like six when she made it for me.
Pretty good.
I still have it. The towel is in horrible shape, but that applique looks beautiful still because she used the right heat and bond. She used the, you also need some stabilizers for stitching that on. So, you know, you do it right, it can last longer than the product you're stitching it onto. But no, it's great. And, but she did it all by hand too. So, all right. So do we feel comfortable with interfacing?
No. I think we can talk about Decaville because that's something that's kind of slightly new. Have you ever heard of Decaville before?
I've heard of the name, but I'm not familiar with the use off the top of my head. So enlighten me.
Decaville is sort of like a leathery type of interfacing. It kind of feels like leather when you touch it. It's different. They have light, medium, and heavy, and they use it typically for bags. I like to have Decaville for like my bag flaps, like if you have like a flap or something. I'll use Peltex for that as well, but if you really want that like thick, and it just fuses to the it's beautiful. It's not like Peltex. If you try to fuse Peltex, it doesn't, but this Decaville like melts literally into the fabric. It's so lovely and expensive.
New stuff usually is too. That's really cool.
If you never tried it and that you are getting into bag making, you definitely need to get some because it's very popular.
And easy to use.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Okay.
And you can draw on it and to like make your shapes and stuff.
Oh really?
Yeah. It's very interesting. It's not what you would at all think of like a typical, and it's kind of, it's tan or beige. So it's not even white. It's just, I don't know. I love it. It's great.
I'm going to go Google that here in a minute and look at, I'm a visual person. Sometimes you just need to look at it, especially if it's different than all the other ones that are typically
it's
white.
Palon makes it.
I know we've talked about the name. I don't know that I've ever like sought it out, but then again, I feel like I might have some. Is that weird?
You never know.
It wouldn't surprise you, would it?
No, of course not. I mean, that happens to me all the time. I think it comes in heavy and light, actually, only. But I've never actually used the heavy, but the light. I mean, I use that for, like, when I made those necessary clutch wallets, I use that for the flap. And it's wonderful.
So let's talk about mixing and mixing interfacing.
Yeah.
Sounds like you do that a lot.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, if you were to make a bag, I typically work with medium weight interfacing for my cotton pieces, for structures, flex foam and Decaville or Peltex. That is, I mean, you just have to have everything for it because it all kind of does something different, you know, in the bag. But those are probably the four that I have to have is medium, Decaville, Peltex. Did I say another one or was that it? I don't remember. Maybe three then. Three.
That's for bag making.
Yes, that's for bag making.
I typically go with something pretty lightweight and sheer for garment making.
Yeah.
Because.
Yeah, I go with.
I want my fabric to have the support, but also not look stiff.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I would never use the medium that I use on clothing. Because even then, it makes things way bulkier. Mm-hmm. When I do it in bags, I'll usually cut off the seam allowance so that it stays out of that, you know, out of the stitch lines because it just gets so thick. But it just makes like beautiful card slots and you know, all those things, right?
I love that you mentioned the seam allowance. So that is something that I noticed with bag making is they would say like cut out this pattern piece in the leather or vinyl or whatever you're sewing it, and then cut out a piece of stabilizer that's like a quarter inch less or you know, around the edges, because you don't want that bulky material to go all the way, especially if it's fusible, you don't need it to go all the way into the seams, because then the seams get so thick.
They do.
You can't sew through them. And so it's really a good call out that you made that comment about, usually with bag making, your stabilizer is a little bit smaller than the pattern piece so that it's just inside that seam allowance area. You fuse it just inside, and then you're stitching in just through the leather or the vinyl and not through that the interfacing. I keep saying stabilizer, the interfacing.
Yeah, and if I make a flap with my Peltex, I usually will sew it inside out, flip it, and then I'll cut my Peltex and just slide it in, because it's just easier, and it'll stay there. And then you do a top stitch around. It kind of secures your Peltex into place, so it's not going to move around. And it's just, you don't want the edge of your project to be a little bit bulkier. You can see that, you know, so you really want to cut it out of.
You want to get those crisp seams. And it's really hard too when you have bulk like that. So it's a good call out for sure. All right. So we kind of mentioned the definition of stabilizers.
I don't think I have any. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. So I kind of geek out over stabilizer. So we talked about what it is. It's a temporary support. There's so many different types. So let me just kind of run through the different types of stabilizers there are. And then we can go from there. So there's a tearaway stabilizer. It just feels like a thick paper and it literally tears. Well, I don't know if I have any right here. There's a cutaway stabilizer, meaning it's thick like the tearaway, like a thicker paper. But when you go to tear it, it doesn't tear. You actually have to use scissors to cut it around. There's water soluble stabilizer, which I am excited to talk to you about. There's an adhesive stabilizer. There's heat-away stabilizer and fusible stabilizer. Fusible stabilizer is pretty common, especially if it's like a, you're using it on like a, there's a mesh stabilizer that's fusible, and you would put that, like, if you had a stretchy t-shirt, right? And you were going to applique or embroider on that shirt, you would put the fusible mesh on the inside because it's really soft and malleable, and it allows the shirt to still be a shirt, but it's going to stay there afterwards. But you can lift it and trim it around just the design, but you're going to put a big piece there. And then after you put that on, you would use like a tearaway stabilizer or a cutaway stabilizer, something that's a little thicker behind that. So you're going to have double stabilizer on your knit, and then you can do your applique or your embroidery, but then the tearaway or the cutaway comes off, and then that mesh, you can lift it and just cut close around it, but it's going to prevent, you know how, with when you sew on knit, it can kind of cause that pucker and stuff. So if you ever get a shirt that's embroidered by a company, like on the pocket, and you get it home, it looks great. And then you wash it once and it's like
yes,
just
yes, yes.
Looks awful. It's because they didn't use the right stabilizer. It doesn't necessarily shrink. It just kind of caves in on itself. You can't press it. It just won't lay flat. The whole pocket just looks like it was crumbled up. It's because the company did not use a fusible mesh to give you the shirt stability, because it's still knit at the end of the day. So if you just use a tearaway on knit, it's afterwards it's going to crumble up. But if you use that fusible mesh, it gives it consistent stability even after you've washed it, and it's going to allow the knit fabric to lay flat continuously even after washing. So there's a big difference. And you need to use both on knits. I know I kind of got off a tangent there. But yeah, so there's not a ton of like stabilizer types. Tear away, cut away, fusible mesh, and water soluble, I would say, are the four that I use the most. I can say I probably never. Okay, well, the adhesive stabilizer is probably the one I actually use the most because, but it's a tear away. It's a sticky tearaway is what we call it. And so it's like got that like the shiny paper backing, and you just peel it off like a sticker. And so it feels like tearaway on the front, but it's sticky on the back, and you just stick it to your material and then it's not going to move around. So my personal favorite is a sticky tearaway or an adhesive tearaway stabilizer, because that way it sticks to the backing material. If you're hooping it for embroidery or anything, it really, and it doesn't leave a sticky residue when you tear it off, which is really nice. But it's not going to shift on you. So I would say sticky tearaway is probably my most commonly used stabilizer. And my most favorite stabilizer is water soluble.
I didn't even know.
You know why. Huh?
I don't know if I knew that was a thing.
Yeah. So this is like where you can make magic happen, right? With with embroidery and making your own materials.
Right, those ornaments that we showed for Christmas.
And the hair bows. Like you, okay, so there's called floating embroidery designs. So what you do is you take water-soluble stabilizer and you put it in your embroidery hoop and you put it in your embroidery machine and you stitch out this floating embroidery design. It could be ornaments, like we mentioned. There's hair bow designs. There's lace. There's so many different things. And you can take these designs and, like, after they're stitched out, because all that's in the hoop is the water-soluble stabilizer.
Mm-hmm.
So you're only stitching through the stabilizer, and it stitches the embroidery design out. When you're done, you take it out of your hoop, so you have the design in the middle of this water-soluble stabilizer. You go to your sink or a bowl of water, and you just dunk it.
Right.
In, like, room temperature water, and it just, all that stabilizer dissolves away, and all that you're left with is the embroidery stitches.
Mm-hmm.
It's like magic. But you have to use special designs because they have to be closed looped and be secure when they're done, and they no longer have stabilizer because they're not actually attached to any fabric.
Right.
It's just stitches. It's so cool. There's a hair bow design, and it looks like lace, and it makes this really pretty hair bow with the little tails, and it and you embroider all the pieces and you water soluble it away, and you're just with the pieces, and then you just attack the pieces together to make the hair bow.
And would you put something on it, like, to make it stiffer?
You could. I mean, if you could use some, you know, starch or something if you really needed to.
Okay.
But it just depends on the density, I guess is the right word, of your embroidery design.
Mm-hmm.
So you have something that's really light and delicate, you might have a really flowy lace, and maybe that's what you want. But if you want it to have more stiffness to it, you might have to use a starch on it or something, for sure. But I think that really depends on the density of your design, your floating embroidery design. Another example of using water-soluble stabilizer was when I made my Barbie dress.
I knew you were going to go there. Yeah.
Okay, so I knew what the stabilizer could do. And I thought, how can I use it differently? And so I had a big roll of it and I laid it out, and the roll wasn't, like, big enough to be, like, the whole length of my dress. So I had to do strips of it, but I needed the strips to stay together because it's not fusible. So that's when I got out my water soluble seam tape, and I used water soluble seam tape to basically attach the rows of water soluble stabilizer to each other. And I laid that out on my table, and I placed all of my little fabric scrap pieces down on top of a piece of mesh that was cut out in the shape of the pattern piece. So I did have a piece of mesh as my pattern piece, but it was, like, really thin mesh. It's not enough to, like, be anything. But it was really just to give me the shape of my pattern, because the end goal was for me to make my own fabric.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took all these little fabric scraps and laid them on top of the mesh, on top of the water soluble stabilizer. Then once I had them all laid on top of that out in the pattern I wanted, I took another layer of the stabilizer, the water soluble stabilizer, and did the same thing. I basically sandwiched the mesh and fabric scraps between two layers of water soluble stabilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And I pinned the crap out of it. Like, so much, so many pins. And then I just went to my sewing machine and I just did straight line stitches in every direction 1,000 times until there every square inch of that entire piece had been sewn, so that none of those little scrap pieces would fall off. Because, and I just hoped and prayed that it was enough. Because once I got done with that, I trimmed off the excess water soluble. I trimmed around that mesh pattern shape. I did serge the edges around the whole fabric piece just to give it some stability. And I threw it in the washer and just hoped that the last 6 hours of my life wasn't just going to go down the drain. So it was a little nerve-wracking. But when I put it in the washer, I just did a gentle rinse cycle. There was no detergent or anything that wasn't necessary, and it was all clean material. And when it came out, all that was left was those fabric scraps sewn together on that mesh backing. All the water-soluble stabilizer was gone. It was exactly what I needed to do. And the reason that stabilizer is so important is if I had tried to just pin all of those pieces of scraps to that mesh, it would have not had the stability for me to be able to, one, sew through it, and it looked good at all. All of my pieces look so good. And then I had to repeat that entire process for the back piece of that dress.
That's right.
It was, I think, 13 hours nonstop in one day. Hey. Ashley was along for that ride. I was messaging her and Diana, like, what have I gotten myself into? But I have to say, it's one of my most creative pieces I've ever made. Mm-hmm. It's a one of the kind. You can't buy that fabric anywhere else because I made the fabric for that dress.
Yeah, it's a good idea for even just like to take that idea and apply it to like making bags or just like, you know, you have a big bin of scraps. You can literally keep the tiniest scraps and put it into a little, you know.
And it gives it a fun texture.
Yeah.
Like when I say like these, what now?
It frays after washing and stuff too, right?
Mine did not.
Oh.
But mine did not.
It's a if you have woven fabrics, it will for sure.
Mine is woven.
Well, you obviously sewed a lot of freaking lines.
I sewed a lot of lines, and I also use really good quality fabric as well. Like, that doesn't fray very easily. Mine washed several times. I didn't have any, like, major fraying or anything. But I will say, when you sew all these lines, the corners that aren't tacked down, or what kind of pop out. So you do get that texture. It's really fun. I think it would be fun to do something like that and then like applique that onto a shirt so that you have like this, like maybe big heart. I just keep saying hearts, but you have this big heart that's really scrappy and you just kind of applique that onto the shirt after, but you made that material. Like you, it's just so cool. But the other thing is like, maybe you don't do scrappy pieces. Maybe you do strips. And you weave them together, but you still need the stabilizer to hold them together while you stitch them together. So you could make your own patchwork plaid stripes, you know, like you could really get creative.
You can make your basket too, right?
Yeah. So I feel like water soluble stabilizer is an underrated missed opportunity when it comes to stabilizers. And it, if you have like any sort of like creative, artistic, and you like to play and have fun and just make things up as you go, like I do, man, that stabilizer should be in your sewing room at all times because the sky's the limit with stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And what I did before I made that dress, just for fair warning, is I took a small piece with some scraps, I sewed it together, and I washed it off, and I tested it.
Yeah.
I tested it. I tested, do I sew straight lines? Do I sew zigzag cross lines? Do I sew, like, I tested different sewing. Do I do free motion? I thought about doing, like, free motion sewing with squigglies all over it, and I'm so glad I didn't do that. Because it's really hard to be consistent, and it would take forever.
Yeah.
But, do a little test swatch and decide, like, okay, do I like this look, this look, this is, did this work? Do I need to do more stitching? Yada, yada. And that made me feel like, okay, now I can just jump in and go give this a whirl.
Definitely would be a great project for kids too, because there's no rhyme or reason and they don't have to do straight lines. And I mean, it's just so cool. I think
it makes me want to do another one with, like different types of denim and make like a scrappy denim bag or something.
And then it would probably fray and give you that extra texture too, I think.
But that's like sew in, right? Like
It is.
I just think it's so cute. Anyways, those are my favorite stabilizers. Obviously, I really love the water soluble. It's not something I use every day, but
yeah,
I feel like it unlocks my creative potential with fabric when I can use it to make my own fabric or make my own floating embroidery designs. I mean, get some. Try it out, play with it. There's a lady I follow on Instagram, and I cannot for the life of me right now think of her Instagram handle, but she uses water soluble stabilizer and does these really cool free motion embroideries. So she doesn't even have an embroidery machine. She just does a free motion embroidery, which everybody can do on their sewing machine. And so you don't even need an embroidery machine to use this, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she does free motion embroidery and she makes this stuff look like coral.
Oh, yeah.
It's like coral pieces. It looks very much like under the water, kind of really cool artistic stuff. And then when she's done, she washes it away and she will stabilize it with starch, right? Some sort of starch. And she lets it dry. And then she puts it on a foam board backing and she puts these pins, these little straight pins in to hold it to the backing. Once it's dry and stiff, she pushes the backing away from the design so that the pins stand up and the design is now floating on top of that foam board and it's just floating up. It is art. It is beautifully stitched art. It creates this pretty shadow behind the stitch. It is so stunning.
Well, we need to figure out that. So that we can share it.
I will. It pops up every now and then on my Instagram. And every time I scroll, I mean, I know how it works and I see it every time, but I stop and watch every single time. And it's beautiful. So I will find it and I will be sure to share it because it is really cool. And some of you probably already know who I'm talking about. But anyways.
If you do, put it in the comments. If there's any that we haven't mentioned, because it probably is, and we need to know them all. So if there is, then definitely go over to our YouTube channel and leave a comment in the comment section. We would love that.
I would say that we've covered a lot when it comes to interfacing and stabilizer. I know that we probably missed some of the common ones. If you have one that you really like to use, please share it with us. I know that there's so many different types, but I think the big thing is most of us prefer fusible when we can.
Oh yeah, for sure. It just really
sticky stabilizer where it literally sticks to your material. So it doesn't move because that's the thing is you don't want it to move. And the key is making sure you're using the right material. I think with interfacing, you can kind of make it a judgment call on preference of what the look you're trying to go for. But for stabilizer, you do need to be using the right stabilizer for your project. There's also, I didn't even mention this, there's something called Clear and Melt. And it's like a plastic sheet.
Oh.
And so when I have a tutorial on it over on Singer, we did a project for a towel. So towel, you have to think terry cloth. So for stabilizers, the material that you're using also determines the stabilizer you need. So as I mentioned, the knit, you need like that two layers of the mesh and the tearaway. Mm-hmm. For a terry cloth towel, there's two different stabilizers, but one goes on the bottom and one goes on the top.
Oh.
And that's, so think of it this way. When you think of a terry cloth towel, it's got loops, right? And all wovens are, I mean, all knits are like loops, right? And, but the terry cloth is like big loops.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want, when we're stitching really close together, like a satin stitch for applique or any sort of embroidery on a towel, we don't want our needle to get caught on one of those loops.
Mm-hmm.
And when there are big loops like that, it can happen very easily. So you have your sticky or non-sticky tearaway stabilizer on the back of your towel. So the backside of your applique or your embroidery. But on the top, you're going to put this Clear and Melt plastic piece. And it's going to make a fun, like punchy sound when you're doing it, but it goes over the top so that your needle doesn't get stuck in those loops.
Okay.
And then when you're done, it'll either melt away, wash away, tear away. There's different ones. And then the back obviously tears away. So with terry cloth or any large loop material, maybe even like a large loop French terry, you would want to use that on both sides and kind of sandwich the stabilizer on both sides of that material so that you're not getting caught and you're getting a beautiful stitch out embroidery or applique. So if you're not sure what material to your stabilizer to use with the material or the project you're doing, there's actually a really fun, really easy to follow blog and guide that I wrote for Singer.com that's over on our website. Yeah. So it's like a great tool to be able to decide this is my project. This is the material, the stabilizer I need. So there you go. So if you need a resource for that, I already made it and it lives over there on Singer's website. And if you can't find it, I'll try to link it in the description. Ashley, don't let me forget. I'll just link it in the description below. I think we got pretty nerdy on this one, but I hope it has helped you guys kind of understand, obviously, the difference between interfacing and stabilizer and when to use which.
Yeah, I think
that feel like you've learned
overwhelming, but I mean, I would just kind of start with one.
Yeah.
And then just learn it. Like, that's what I did. I just started with, like, medium weight feasible interfacing. Mm-hmm. And then bring it home and then see what it does. You know, don't go out and buy all the things like this one girl that I know. Oh, yeah. I was like, this one girl that I know, she went about all the time. But yes, Bethany did that.
Okay, well, let me explain myself if you're going to throw me under that bus. Well, I'll put myself under it. I am the type of person that when I get my mind set on a project I want to do, I want to already have everything I need to do it. Yeah. I don't want to have to stop and go to the store.
Sure.
Because then I'm not going to do it. And so when Joann's, for example, has all their stabilizer and interfacing for 60% off, I'm going to get a little bit of some of the stuff that I know I want to use in the near future or want to learn how to practice. Right? I did ask you, like, hey, out of these, which, so I did have you point me and say, okay, these are the ones I most commonly use. And so those are the ones I got. I didn't get some random one-off that I'll never use.
No.
The other thing I want to tell you is the stabilizers, they're all like all white, but they come with like that piece of paper, like that's folded up in it.
Oh, it drives
don't,
me.
But don't get rid of it or cut off a section of it that you need and like pin it to the material. So you know what it is. So it's identifiable. Cause until you get really familiar with these, you may not know what, which from which. And when a pattern says you should use Peltex or SF-101 or whatever the brand, the version is, they recommend, you may already have it. But if you don't have it labeled, you're going to go, I don't know what that is. They're all white, you know? So mark them, cut, if that paper that's wrapped up in it annoys you, just cut off the piece that has the information about that material and just pin it or tape it or staple it to it or something.
Yeah, because it's a big roll, but it's like a repeat of the same information. But just in case someone only buys like a half a yard, it has to be all there kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's important information. It tells you how to use it. It tells you what it is. So it's you need that as an identifier between all of it. And that's for interfacing. And then the stabilizers come in rolls typically. And the paper information is usually on the outside. I stick it down in the middle of the roll. So I can pull it out and go, okay, yeah, that's what, but I mean, at this point I know just by grabbing them and touching them, which one's which, but sometimes I'll get like tear away and cut away confused.
Yeah.
But you just take the corner and go, oh, that one doesn't tear. That must be cut away. It's right. You know?
Yeah.
But for the most part, I keep the information down into the middle of the roll. So it's always there. All right.
Right.
Do you feel more confident about stabilizers now, Ashley?
Mm-hmm.
And interfacing, you were pretty well versed on interfacing.
When it comes to garments, I usually just use like lightweight interfacing.
Yeah.
So I use that with my bags. I'll use it for garments. So I'm not going like, you know, it's not too complicated for me yet, at least.
Yeah. I mean, we can make it complicated, but there's no sense to.
No.
Again, there's no hard rule, I feel like, that says with interfacing that you have to use one specific thing for that specific project. Again, it's personal preference. So let's say your bag that you're making, the pattern says to use something kind of lighter because the bag is being made in like a vinyl or a leather or something that's already pretty thick and substantial. But let's say you decide to make it out of quilting cotton and you want a quilted look. Well, you're going to be using foam or something different. So again, there's a lot of variables there. And the more you learn and practice with these different interfacings and stabilizers, the more confident and comfortable you'll be able to make those calls and those judgment calls based on what you're wanting to do. So
I just want to mention though, that like what they used to do though, before stabilizers and things, is they would use different fabric. Like I have used a heavy duty canvas or something like that to add stability to cotton fabric. Like there is, you can use other things. You don't have to use the, you know, Pellon, go to the store, buy it. So just know that like, if you, you know, already have other fabric, maybe scrap, as long as it's the same color so that like you don't see it through your main fabric.
Yeah, exactly.
Then like you could totally just, it would act the same way as a sew-in stabilizer. using a thicker material to back
canvas
it.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's what
I did at the very beginning.
Now, before we jump into our sewing confession.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what?
I just want to say a happy early birthday to Ashley.
Oh, right. That's coming up. What is airing?
So this podcast is coming out on the 19th. So I wanted to make sure that we said happy birthday before your birthday.
I'm going to cry.
The big 4-0.
Oh my God.
So I can only say that because I turned the big 4-0 and later this year. So I'm right there with you, girl. But just want to take a minute and say that we all love you and we wish you all the best. And 40 is the new 30.
It is. It really is.
Awesome. Beautiful. All right.
Thank you.
Ready to jump into the sewing confession?
Yes. Okay. Confession, man, I'm thrown and I don't know what to
do. So this week's sewing confession is a little spicy, so brace yourself. And don't forget, if you have a confession that you want to share, click the link in our description. They're anonymous. Mm-hmm. We don't know who you are unless you tell us in the confession box, so don't. All right, so this week's sewing confession is, one night, my boyfriend and I experimented with satin fabric. We loved how soft it felt, but sadly the fabric caught on fire from a nearby candle. We freaked out and tried to put out the fire. We both had minor injuries and rushed to the emergency room. We learned a lesson that night. Satin melts.
God. Yeah, it does. It's like plastic. Well, we're glad you're okay. You're able to send us this confession. That would have been really unfortunate.
I hope there's no longer satin material fused to your skin. Yeah. And I hope it's not in sensitive places.
Fabric, it can invoke things in us, but just this, you know, beautiful textures and things. Mm-hmm. But you just gotta, you know, use the candles, the electronic ones. I think.
Yeah, well, battery operated is probably the safe bet, but I don't think that was what they were going for.
No, I know.
That was a good one. We love it. We love it to see it. And we hope that nobody ever uses candles with satin fabric again. Let this be a lesson learned. Thank you for sharing that with us. And until next week, we love you all. Happy birthday, Ashley, and happy sewing.
Bye.